Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Luke, and we're in second chapter, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. And when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice, according to that which is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Ghost was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And he came by the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him after the custom of the law, then took he him up in his arms and blessed God and said, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace according to thy word. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people Israel. And Joseph and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. And Simeon blessed them, and said unto Mary his mother, Behold, This child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yea, a sword shall pierce through thy own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Aser. She was of a great age, and had lived with an husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all them that looked for redemption in Jerusalem. And when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned into Galilee to their own city Nazareth. And the child grew, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them, and came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man.
Okay, Dan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
Yes, one brief announcement. Please, when you send in a question for John to answer, if you're making it about a statute or an executive order, include enough information so that we have a clue as to what the executive order or statute is about in case John hasn't read it. And with that, the first question is, what does the executive order 14196 mean for us?
Okay.
Are you familiar with that, John, by any chance? 14196.
96, and that's executive order, right?
Right.
Executive, a plan to establish the United States. Executive Order 14196, a plan for establishing the United States Sovereign Wealth Fund. Well, I haven't read this, not aware of it, so maybe I'll take a look at it, and maybe I can respond next week. We'll see once what happens. Okay, next question.
Does NLA have a COS in multiple counties, implying one COS that covers many counties?
I don't understand the question. What state, what counties are they talking about?
Supposing somebody has a COS set up in your county, and the county next door doesn't have one, can your COS move over and take that one on too?
Well, definitely should work to establish it. We're trying to do that. We're in Dutchess County. We've had a few people come in over time when I was doing some, when I was really bringing forward the plan that we had and kind of giving some... just some meetings, and some people had come from different counties, and I tried to encourage them to continue because we can start something in their counties. So, we had some people coming in, or at least one or two people from Orange County. We had a couple people, or at least one person from Putnam County and Wood Dutchess County. And so we do plan on helping those people if they want to establish them in their counties. We'll go out and give a presentment. And when we had given the presentment, which is what I was trying to say before, here in Dutchess County, they had come to those presentments, or a couple of those presentments. I did it in a few times. We came together and explained everything, what we're doing. But now we're pretty much getting established here in Dutchess County, and we're doing the same. We're going to do the same thing in every county around us. But I will speak to anyone that is trying to get a committee of safety going. If they want to get something going, maybe we could do something over Zoom or over our program and bring it into the room as a presentment. But people should be able to learn to do that on their own. We have lots of information here under Start a Committee of Safety. If you come down to handbooks, videos, and tools, and I might put out a paper, a little bit of more instructions here, because I put together, these are the presentments that I did at the different meetings that we had, you know, building up to share all of the different things in the different subcommittees. So there's lots of videos here that everyone should watch. And as a matter of fact, we're going to teach the people, new people coming into our Committee of Safety, that they should go to this page to catch up with us for what we're doing, because they need to get the full presentments. And now, of course, there is plenty of information here. We've got PowerPoints, Word, videos, PDFs. We also have a seminar. This is a seminar that I had done before. Excuse me. Where I've laid things out and used these different videos for the purpose of, you know, bringing in and leading people to understanding what exactly we're doing and to build our committees of safety. So you can follow that kind of a protocol. Then we got lots of information on monthly meeting protocols, download videos, and for county meetings. And every once in a while, you probably should play an instructional or an educational video and bring it up for discussions. But everyone should be, of course, getting educated at the same time here at National Liberty Alliance at their own pace, because we need to understand the law. We need to understand the Constitution, which is the law. And who we are as a people. We need to know about our founding fathers, the truth about our founding fathers. And I think I'm going to talk a little bit tonight about the court system and what's going on in the federal courts and how far they've taken us away from who we are as a people. But in any event, you know, education is the key thing. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, you know, forget about it. It's not going to happen. That's a partial quote by Jefferson. He said they expect what never was and never will be. So, okay, what else you got, Ken?
Okay, I assume this is a hypothetical question. Within a COS, and apparently they would see that it had significant number of members that they could elect a sheriff, where does he get his education along with other county sheriffs?
Well, again, that's one of the main reasons I wrote a couple of books. One of them was, let me go open them up. We'll look at them at the same time. You can find them under the Welcome tab, book by John Durash. I think probably the best book for everyone and anyone, especially and also the sheriff, is Government by Consent. It's a very thick book. It has a lot of information in it, and it deals with a lot with the sheriff in it. But also, we have other book that you might want to give the sheriff, and that would be the handbooks we wrote, County Sheriff Common Law Handbook. That's another book that should be given to your sheriff. And I would probably get three or four of those handbooks. They're not too expensive. You could do this in PDFs, because all these, with the exception of the grant of the Government by Consent, all these handbooks, though, are on PDF form. You can get them up here on our Start a Committee of Safety page, and the same page we were looking at, which would be handbooks, videos, and tools. But it's much more impressive to the sheriff if it comes in a handbook. But for our own edification, you know, we might not want to buy these books. We can, you know, just download them. But a lot of people do like the handbooks. You know, we have quite a few handbooks here. People can go through it. You can click on each one of these handbooks. I think it actually takes you to, let's see, each one will take you to its own page, which will give you more information and details about these handbooks. Same thing with the other books that I've written. You can do the same thing. But as a matter of fact, well, I want to talk a little bit about what we're doing with the administration, Trump and his administration, of course, we're talking about, and trying to educate them, which is difficult because they're lawyers. But when you, as far as replacing the sheriff, look, if you're going to want to have a meeting with the sheriff, you want to give him the opportunity to come in and see what it is that he thinks, what he knows. And you want to pre-educate him. So you want to get him a copy at least of the Government by Consent book. And, you know, you want to put together all of your paperwork with a seal. You know, you're going to want to have your charter. You're going to want to have your resolutions. And you're going to want to put that together, package it nice, and make sure you have your seal on it. And you're going to want to introduce the sheriff through these paperwork and the book. Maybe a small group would go the first time to meet up with the sheriff. It might only be 5, 10, 15 minutes long. You want to keep it very short. You don't want to get into too much detail at that time. But just introducing the fact that you're a committee of safety starting up in the county, you know, which we're training people to have government by consent to get more involved in the political and judicial processes. And you'd like for him to come out and talk to your group. You know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks out. You want to do it at a regular meeting where you want to, at that point in time, you should be organized enough to, you know, go through your meeting in a proper format. And again, you'll find that on the page that I just went to again on Starter Committee of Safety. So when the sheriff comes, that whole meeting should be really focused in, you know, on the sheriff, and you're going to be asking him questions. He's going to talk to you about the things he thinks. Now, hopefully, whether he's, you know, totally ignorant to the law prior to the meeting with him, doesn't understand the common law, very few sheriffs do. I only know a couple, literally, less than one count on my hand. So, two or three, maybe, I know. But you want to give him the opportunity to, or her, to find out what the truth is about who we are as a people. And this book will do it for you, Government by Consent. And so, depending on how he responds, we even put together a lot of, let me see if I can go back here a bit. We put together questions for the sheriff. I think it's a good place to start. I mean, people can add to or remove some of these questions, you know. Free and independent, do whatever you want. But we do want to stay as structured together as we can. I'm just looking to see if we have, let's see, questions. Let me see if I can find it quickly this way. Oh, wrong one, S. Oh, here it is, proposed questions to the sheriff. So this is a good one. I'm going to read one or two questions. These are proposed questions for the sheriff. It should be done by the chair, who would go through these questions. And then everybody has the opportunity to ask more questions, of course. But we should really pre-discuss this and make sure we know the major questions we want to ask. We would start off, we understand that many things within the literature we shared are new to you, like it was to us. Let us not embrace the sheriff or candidate. Let us reason with him where he errs. You can see now why you must know the law. Okay, so have you read the charter resolution books that we presented to him? Hopefully he did. If he didn't, that's not a good sign. What was the most profound thing that you learned, and how has it changed your thinking of the law? So these are some good questions. I'm not going to read all these questions. Anybody can, you know, pop this down, read it for themselves, bring it up to your committee, and discuss how you want to handle the sheriff. But the key thing is this. If the sheriff is not going to become educated and conform to the law and become who he should be, you know, a law enforcer and not a code enforcer, and understand his powers and authorities and exercise them as he protects the people from overreached government. Because that's his major job there, to maintain and keep the law. And if he's not happy to do that, well, okay, then if you got at least 20 people, you got more than enough to do a recall. I mean, the more people you have, the easier it'll be. Because a recall will require a percentage of signatures in of whatever the last election was to elect him as president, I mean, as sheriff. And so you have to go out and collect enough signatures for that recall. And you can have him recalled and get a special election going. You can have this done within 90 days. You can have him removed from office and going forward with an election for another sheriff. The question has been come to me quite often as well, okay, if you're going to do that, well, you know, how do you find a person who would be a sheriff? Well, that person might come from amongst us. I know when we were doing different things in the past, in the Tea Parties or whatever group we had going, Ron Paul movement and so on, we had people who wanted to run for office that came up from us, and they did run for office, and some of them did get elected. And so that might happen with sheriffs too. But nevertheless, once it goes out for election, you're going to have other people stepping up that are going to want to become sheriffs, and we have the opportunity to quiz them. At that point in time, we would imagine we should have quite a few, a lot more than 20 people, maybe 40, 50 people, who knows. Again, you could grow pretty quickly. We have probably about 10 or 12 people in our group at this point. The last meeting we had, we only had like 7 or 8 people show up, but we're hoping to have everybody show up next meeting. And we're really pushing everyone to come in with, bring a guest to introduce them to the Committee of Safety, see once what we're doing, and hopefully we'll grow quickly. If you've got 10 people and we bring in 10 people, you know, now you become 20. And if you've got 20 people in for another meeting and they bring in 20, now you have 40. So you could grow rather quickly that way if people really focus in and do that. We really have to push each other to really do that so that we can grow. The quicker we can grow, the more powerful we become, the more influence we have. And so, again, someone will be running for sheriff to replace the sheriff we recall, if that's what's necessary. And, again, hopefully we'll find whoever's running for sheriff, someone who is willing to really be a real sheriff. So, okay, next.
Do you have a list of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania members?
Yes, we do. Well, I don't know how many we have, but I mean, first of all, first order of business, let's take a look at, go to our directory. And Montgomery County, what state is that?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. So we'll go to PA.
Near Philadelphia.
Okay, so you can find this under directory. Just click on the word directory up here on the blue bar. You'll come to this page, and you come down to, in this case, we're going to Pennsylvania. So we'll click on Pennsylvania. And then we can see that the total members for the state is 545 members in that state. There's 67 counties. And these are the counties that we have someone in Montgomery right there, which may be the person who's asking this question. Anyway, this is their phone number here. You can contact this individual, Tony, in Montgomery County here in Pennsylvania and connect and join the Committee of Safety. Now, if this Committee of Safety, if this county wasn't on the board here with a phone number and someone to build that, then it's up to the individuals going up here to do this. And maybe click on you follow the instruction. It'll tell you how to put your name and number up here. The only thing we post is the first name, your county, and your phone number. And you could be a placeholder. You can say, well, I really don't want this job, but I'll do it for a while until someone in the group wants to take it over. But basically, occasionally someone will call you, and hopefully they'll join up with the committee. You can also look for counties next door to you. I don't know how any of these counties is close to Montgomery, but if they're close to Montgomery, you're going to want to connect with those individuals, because you want to, over time, really establish a relationship with every single Committee of Safety within your state. So one by one. And then you want to encourage and work together with other Committees of Safety to fill a Committee of Safety in counties in between the 2 or 3 years or somewhere else in the state. You should all be working together to get a Committees of Safety going in every single state. So now, as far as getting a list of individuals, if you get a hold of Jan, send them an email. You can send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. You can request a list of all the members of this within that state, particularly in the county is what you want, but you know, we'll give you all of them. But we're not going to give you emails. We don't want people email blasting any information or anything like that. The only thing you'll get is first name, county, and phone number. That's all we have on that, right, Jan? When you give those lists out, first name, right, and phone number. So you can make phone contact with these people, try to encourage them to join in. And you can also use that list and get it updated anytime you need. So that, you know, you can say, well, I want to, well, let's work. You may be working with a couple of committees of safety saying, hey, let's get a committee of safety in this county over here because there isn't any over there. And then you would be able to hopefully find someone in that county on that list and give them a call, tell them what's going on, invite them to a committee of safety meeting, see if they're interested in getting one going in their county, and explain to them how important it is to do so. Okay. Next question.
This concerns the definition of null and void. Does it mean that the property is free and clear of any mortgage? If so, can you sue for damages against the mortgage company? I heard treble damages of the loan amount.
Well, I know what the word null and void means, and first used in law as far as I'm aware of. I'm sure it was used before, but in Marbury versus Madison, anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. That's a paraphrase, but all those words are in there. And but null and void, from another perspective, I don't know how it was used in a sentence or why that would be brought up in a mortgage or something of that nature. So, but read the question one more time. It was a short question. Maybe I can respond somewhat.
Okay. It starts with the definition of null and void. Does it mean that the property is free and clear of any mortgage? If so, can you sue for damages against the mortgage company? I heard treble damages of the amount.
Yeah, well, look, concerning mortgages and the courts and the systems, how things work, you know, the system is great, but what they've done to the system is really horrible. But again, I don't know how it's being used with mortgages. Mortgages are a problem in the sense that if you have a mortgage company, company or a bank or whatever you want to call them, generally people go to banks to get a loan and go through the process. The bank will go, or even a mortgage company, I guess, I don't even know if that's properly called a mortgage company. I don't know. But in any event, if you go to some institution that that sets up loans and they go to the Fed window for the monies and work the loan out for you, then at that point, you know, the money has come from the Fed window. It didn't come from that bank or whatever institution provided for that loan. There is no meeting of the minds with that for that process, so there really is no contract. They were really just an agent, private agent setting up a loan. They maybe have a half a point or a point out of that as for setting up that loan. That would be their profit line, and that's it with them. But they will send you a book, and you'll send your money every month to that company, that bank or institution or whatever it is. And I'm sure they'll put some of that back into the Fed window. Maybe they have a different way for that to work as far as the money. But paying the bank, they're just an agent to the thing. There's no skin in the game. They really can't sue you or do anything because there's no contract. The agreement was between you and the Fed window. Now, this probably goes back to the SESQ accounts, where ultimately everybody has a value, and you can actually write that off. I wouldn't do anything like that because it's going to get you into a whole bunch of trouble. But you could argue and fight the mortgage, you know, whoever is trying to collect that mortgage if you're trying not to pay for that. So, again, it's a mess, to be honest with you. And the court system is even a greater mess. All right. Question?
Yeah, I lost you, John.
Okay, you didn't get that answer?
Yes, I got that answer, and then I just heard a silence. That was the last question.
Okay. All right. Well, let me open up the queue here. Let me see if I can click that in. Open that up. Things are slow today. Okay, the queue's open. Anybody wants to get into the queue? If you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1 to get into the queue. And if you're on a app or a browser, there should be a button to get into the queue. And I want to talk a little bit about what we're planning to do in the courts here. We're trying to set up, we're trying to go to the United States Supreme Court. And I really think it'd be a waste of time if I tried to go through trial court and then work my way up the system through the appellate system and then eventually into the U.S. Supreme Court. And so I've been doing a lot of research on this, and I found out there is a way to go directly to the Supreme Court, because they have the what's called the original jurisdiction. The United States Supreme Court has the original jurisdiction concerning the focus of our paper that we're going to file with the Supreme Court, which deals with the Rules Enabling Act. And the Rules Enabling Act had really turned the whole Constitution upside down and on its head, turned the court system upside down. And in my research, I'm finding some very interesting things that I've never connected before. And I wonder if lawyers have connected this, okay? What really started me to look a little deeper into this is because of the acronym ALJ, which is Administrative Law Judge. Okay, that's what ALJ. And I found out that every single trial court judge is an ALJ. They're an administrative law judge. There are no law judges, nor can they really be law judges, not at a trial level, because that requires a court of record, which is a court that opens up with a jury, a free and independent jury. That's the other key. Because, for instance, probably all constitutions have this in it, but if not all, at least most, and I would imagine they all should, of course, and that is a court of record in every state court. For instance, here in New York, we call it the New York Supreme Court, Dutchess County, or New York Supreme Court, Orange County, Ulster County, Putnam County, or whatever county you're in. Each county has a state court called the Supreme Court of New York, okay? And that court has two different court systems run through it. One is administrative, and the other one is law. We can take the administrative one and call it equity courts. Equity court is that which proceeds according to statutes, okay? And this is pretty clear. I'm finding this all over the place. Deeper and deeper research, of course. It's not obvious. It's not out there, okay? An administrative law judge cannot hear a law case. So when we go into courts and you have this judge making all these decisions, they don't belong making any decisions. Matter of fact, when I go in and open a case, my last few cases that I've opened, matter of fact, I've been doing this for a long time, actually, I never open, well, here in New York, we have an option of doing it. We go for what's called the index number. So we file for an index number here in New York, which opens a court case. And that index number, I think it's $210 for that index number. And then there's what's called an RJI, which is, that's what brings the judge in. So when you file for an RJI, that costs $95, okay? And that's request for judicial intervention. I prefer calling it, it's a request for judicial interference. But in any event, I never file for that RJI. I'm not interested in the RJI because I want to make the argument on paper, which is what's supposed to happen. Okay, supposed to be making this argument on paper. And then at some point in time, then you go through the process proceeding, getting into actually the court case starts itself, physically speaking. But first you go back and forth. More often than not, if you go back and forth in an argument, if it's done correctly, one side's eventually going to realize, hey, I'm going to lose. Maybe I better make a deal instead of continuing this court case. Of course, lawyers aren't too quick to do anything like that because they want the court case to go forward. The more time spent, the more money made, you know. But in any event, anybody who goes for the RJI, that may, and I don't know if that's even necessary, you know, because you can pursue and get a have a judge or some kind of a administrator of some kind within the court to deal with a problem if there's a problem between the parties. But if you're just arguing the points, there really is no problems. Maybe when you get to discovery, if one refuses to give the information that's being requested, then you can use the court system to push that through. And maybe you'd file the RJI for that purpose. The problem is once that is filed in, you've got a judge's fingers into your case. And they start to make all kinds of decisions. And they don't have the power or the authority anywhere. You can't find it anywhere that we have the power or authority to make any decision. Okay? The next step up from when you're going through a trial court, though, which is an administrative court, remember, the other side of that court is a law case, a law court. And that law court, okay, is going to be dealt with the jury. It's going to be a jury trial. It's called a court of record. Okay. Now, I've been researching. I've known a lot of this stuff for quite some time. But this thing about the administrative law judge, everywhere you look, they don't have the power or the authority to make any decision over any individual. So think about that. All the cases that have taken and been thrown out, all the cases where evidence was prevented from going forward, or where a judge actually took the case and tried it himself, or even took control of the jury and added to the jury and made different changes on whatever the jury wanted, and he did something else. All these different things is all interference, and it is unlawful. They don't have the power or the authority to do this. Now, I know I can make a really powerful case, going back to the Rules Enabling Act, dealing with these administrative law judges and so on and so forth. The problem is, and this has always been the big problem, it's money. We need money. Now, I've asked last week, for people, I said, we're going to do this something, we're going to take it right to the Supreme Court. Before I talk a little bit more about that, let's look at the case itself. In fact, and this is why we really want to get as much attention to this as possible, I know Gerard made a connection with some podcasters, and we're going to be going on talking with those people hopefully soon, and I want to try to get out there as much as possible and talk about this case that's coming up. And we would hope that everybody would get a copy of this case. We'll post it up online to get this everywhere. We've got to get a lot of attention towards this case. But number one, they can't refuse this case because it is the case that will solve the most destruction in our courts. It'll get rid of all the problems within our courts once they deal with this, dealing with the Rules Enabling Act. Which brings us back to courts of law, courts of justice, where courts now can open up a court of law, untouched by any individual like a judge or a magistrate or whoever might want to stick their fingers into the thing. And I got a lot of ideas with a lot of people that I'd like to get this info to. There's about 40 people around Trump, particularly in his administration, and also some senators and congressmen, probably a number of about 40 people. I'd like to send 40 books. We have to send 40 books, which is government by consent, to these individuals. And with a letter, a short letter of introduction, so on and so forth. Now, most of these people have already received a lot of information from us over time, but it's time to really educate them. We got to get these books into their hands. Now, even if only a few of them read, and we can turn only, it's only to turn one or two or three, okay, and if they really understand what we're talking about, which non-lawyers are the ones that are probably going to understand. Lawyers have a big problem with this. But anyway, we turn a few people, they'll realize they got to do something too. They got to realize we need to get our courts of justice back. This is the only way. This is who we are as a people. This is where we come from. And it's all about common law. And also, with that book, I'd want to send a copy of the case. So we want to get this case before all of these individuals. We've got to turn some of these people. Again, we only have to turn one or two or three, because they will turn the others, okay? Because they'll understand and realize how far we have drifted off who we are as a people and this Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and, of course, the most importantly, the foundation of our law, which is the Declaration of Independence. And so I can build an extremely powerful case, and a case that they only deal with certain cases. You've got to realize that the Supreme Court gets between 5,000 to 7,000 cases a year. They can only take 100 to 150 cases. Okay, and that's all they take. And anything that is really strongly constitutional, a real big problem, those are the cases they're going to take first and foremost. I don't know that I've even heard of a case more important than this case. And when I finish writing this paper, I think people will agree with me. Because our law courts are gone. They've been shut down. They're not there anymore. There's no way you can access them. And this is on the state level as much as it is on the federal level. We're dealing with the federal level. We get the federal level back, we can use the federal level to leverage ourselves and force the state levels to bring back courts of law again. And to do it properly, where we have a jury that is free and independent, that understands who they are and what they are doing there, and the powers and the authorities that they have, that they are the lawmakers, that they have the power of nullification and so on. So this is what we have to do. But I can't do it alone. Like I said, we collected about $400 since I asked, and most of that is three people are sending $100 a piece, okay? And so I think we collected about $400 altogether, if two people send in $5, $10, $20 or whatever. It's not enough. So this case is up to you. Now, I know, there are a lot of people that it seems like it's the same people that are really putting the money out when we really need it, We have a couple of people who, from time to time, are able to send us $1,000 or so, and especially when we're doing a project or something like that really helps quite a bit. We don't need a lot of money because we're not a group of lawyers, okay? But we do need some money. And I do believe this case will go before the United States Supreme Court. I don't think that they can get away with it, ignoring this case, especially if we can get this out to as many podcasters and people as possible. That'll do a number of things. It'll help us grow National Liberty Alliance as well as getting the attention to this case, which it needs. It needs attention. So it's up to every person who is coming to these meetings here. We have quite a few people that follow us, particularly on Rumble. Not so much on YouTube, but Rumble. All those people that are hearing this, what we're talking about tonight, I'm really asking for them to dig into their pockets and give a few bucks for this. Everybody, even people who are giving us $5, $10, or $20 a month, okay, just support. But that's supporting NLA to keep it going. This is a project. This is something we need extra money for, okay? And if everybody, that is listening in gives us $20 a piece, okay, and if you can't afford $20, maybe $5. Everybody can afford something. Give us a dollar, okay, whatever it is, just something. Okay, participate with this. Help us to get this case into the courts, into before the United States Supreme Court, and let's get our courts of record back. Now, from time to time, I do get a letter from someone, an email, we're not going to get nowhere. You're wasting your time. Blah 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 blah. Well, that's okay. There are people that just are so negative-minded. Well, maybe they're not paying attention to all the things we're doing. We've been working on this to get to this point. Not that we understood exactly what we were going to do when we get to certain points, but we knew we had to move ourselves to the point and build a case against the federal judiciary. And we did that in ACES. We can prove, without a shadow of a doubt, that these people are subversive. They've destroyed our courts of law. We can prove, without a shadow of a doubt, that this is a conspiracy. Because however they respond to a case in Texas, they'll respond the same way in New York, Pennsylvania. Doesn't matter what state you go to. All judges do the same thing. Plus, they're hearing a case that they don't, cases that they don't have the authority to hear. They ignore your movement towards courts of record, which is a court by jury. They do everything they can to prevent that from going in. And the biggest problem that we have, the biggest problem in our judicial problem in our judiciary is the Rules Enabling Act. The Rules Enabling Act changed everything. It took equity and law, fused them together, called it civil law. They teach the minions of the New World Order, which are esquires, they teach them that we're under Rome, that we're under Roman law, which is nothing less than Babylonian law. Literally, it could be traced to Babylon. It's the law of the city, is what it's called. And its purpose is to control the people in the mass. And that goes to Babylon. It went from Babylon, Babylonian law, to Justinian law, from Justinian law to Roman law, from Roman law to the law we go into right now, into the courts. We are under Roman law. These minions of the New World Order are useful idiots. I guess you'd call them useful idiots. Anybody who goes along with it and doesn't educate themselves to realize the fraud here, they're just useful idiots also. In any event, the system that they set up, brings us under civil law. I know that they've taught different things to lawyers in different time periods. The older esquires, I think they have a little bit of a different view on things, but it's still a distorted view. But the ones that really, the big message, and maybe it's been now for quite some time, it goes back to 1938, the Rules Enabling Act, when it was really came into play. So that's quite some time ago. But they've been teaching these lawyers in school, this is one accord, so they have to be learning this in school, that we are fashioned over Rome. That's our whole government is fashioned over Rome. Nothing could be more untrue than that. That we are fashioned under Israel. That's who we are fashioned under. And our founding fathers are clear on this. I've written a paper on this also, a memorandum of law, and focusing in on the law and where our law comes from and who we are as a people. And it goes right back to the Bible. We're under common law or natural law, whichever one you want to call. It's the first order of business in the creation of this nation, the Declaration of Independence. We are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. Okay, and that is the foundation of our law, the Declaration of Independence. It's a covenant with God. It was asking to be under His blessings and under His law. And of course, we are a Christian nation. You can't take that away. People can say whatever they want, but history will prove them wrong if they say anything else. And we've got plenty of papers, plenty of information on our website here, making and proving that very point. And so we're under natural law, and they've taken it away. Not only did they take it away, by fusing these two together, fusing equity is legislative law, meant for government agencies, it's administrative law is what it is, government agencies and also commercial activity, which we gave them the authority to write rules and regulations and codes to control commercial activity. On the federal level, it's interstate commercial activity. On the state level, it's commercial activity within the state itself. So the states take care of that business, and the federal takes care of that which is interstate. So, you know, again, we've given them that power and authority to write those papers for them. And what does it say in the Constitution and in the preamble itself? And I'm going to read that to the preamble to the United States. Okay. I mean, to the Constitution. It is, I can get to the page. Okay. Now, the key thing here is the blessings of liberty. You see, which brings us right back to the Declaration of Independence, which brings us right back to the foundation of the law here in the United States of America. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, okay, we're to establish justice, okay, and that brings us to courts of law to begin with, but also equity, legislative law. And by the way, equity has to follow American jurisprudence. American jurisprudence is common law. It has to pass the muster of common law. It's under the rules of common law. You read about that, particularly in the Seventh Amendment. Okay? So, we the people of the United States, in order to form a perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty. That's our unalienable rights. To ourselves and our posterity, and we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So what the Rules Enabling Act did was it just wiped out the blessings of liberty. It wiped out unalienable rights. That's why they have their civil rights, and to some degree, they don't have a problem ignoring your unalienable rights. They're not establishing justice. They've established injustice. So right off the bat, they've turned it upside down. They also nullified without our power, without authority. As a matter of fact, we the people can't even nullify this because we took it to God. It's already done. And we can't speak for another person. We have to be 100% in all in one accord to agree to get rid of this Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And somehow we got to get to our posterity that haven't even been born yet and get to all those people to agree in order to get rid of this. So it can't be gotten rid of. You don't break. No one can break a covenant with God. Nobody. And they'll have to face God's wrath on this. But what else did it do? It nullified the justice the system that we set up. That let me see if I can get to this. I think it's here in, is it in 5? No. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it would be in Article 3, the judicial powers. Okay, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. So what did the Rules Enabling Act did? Number one, it got rid of the blessings of liberty in our preamble. Number two, it got rid of law here that we the people ordained and established. Look at their servants. They don't have the power to ordain and establish anything. They can't change the foundation and of our law. They can't change the Constitution. And so they nullified or got rid of law. It doesn't exist. How can you take law and equity and fuse them together? And then you get rid of the rules of common law, and you got the law, you know, the rules of men. It causes other problems. You go to the Seventh Amendment, and the Seventh Amendment says in suits of common law, that's gone now. That doesn't exist no more. They haven't physically removed it, okay? But the Act on the Rules Enabling Act removed it. It's not there no more. It doesn't exist. You don't get courts of justice anymore. If people are happy living under this, then don't help us. You know, I hate to talk like that, but I don't have a choice. If you really want to help us, give us 5 or 20 bucks or whatever to help us get through this process, to get into the courts and deal with this problem. You know, one of the other expenses that's going to have to be paid, you know, if we get before it, they're going to want a physical argument. Each side gets 30 minutes. I don't know who's going to argue the other side. There'll be no one to argue the other side. It'll be a one-way thing, a one-way street here, okay? But in any event, you know, they'll have paper, but then they're going to want a quiz. It's 30 minutes for each side. So we got to go out to Washington, a couple of us, to deal with that. And I do believe we're going to get into it, especially if you put the pressure and putting all this information, the education, the books to all of these people we're talking about within Trump's administration and others around him, and also a copy of this paper to see what's going on. Again, getting this word out to podcasters and everybody and anybody else we can get it out to, just sharing it at our meetings and let them get it out to other people. This has got to go viral to really help make it work, and we need money to do it. We don't need, you know, $500,000 or... Well, we don't need $20,000, we don't need $10,000, but we do need money, okay? And we're not getting it. I don't have the money anymore to do this. Anyway, in suits of common law, Amendment 7, where the value in the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. And no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. Well, they're not there no more. Those rules are not there no more. Our common law courts are not open anymore. Even where they have a jury coming in, they're all tainted. They're under the control of the judge, of the prosecutor. There's no education. People don't have a clue on how to have government by consent. You know, I speak to myself first. There was a time I didn't know it. I did my research, time went on, and out of that came, you know, the government by consent book that we really push people to get to their sheriff, and everyone should get a copy of that book so that they really get an understanding of all these things that we talk about and have been talking about for, what, 12, 15 years, whatever it's been. It's been quite some time. I think it was 2012 to 13 when we turned into the National Liberty Alliance. But prior to that, it goes back to 2008 when we started to really, or 2007 with the Ron Paul movement. And that's when I started building this website. And it changed as time went on to the National Liberty Alliance. You know, we went to New York Liberty Alliance first. We were the New York committeemen before that. Before that, it was just a website trying to educate people. But anyway, that's only the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more here. Okay. And, you know, when you get up to the next step up in the court, which is the appellate court, okay, I do believe there's a process to go directly into an appellate court. And you would do that once you open up a court of record and they deny you your due process by denying you a court of record, by having a judge come in and sticking their fingers into the case and making decisions and eventually even throwing you out of the court. As soon as they stick their fingers into the case, and I'm working on a case right now where I know this is going to happen, and I will share that case as soon as we get past a certain point to see, show people how we dealt with the problem. You know, as soon as a problem comes up in the court, you got to appeal the process right away, because the court case can't continue. If you open the court of record and they're doing everything they can to prevent that court of record from going forward, whether they understand what they're doing or not, because these people think they have all this power. And as long as we believe they have all this power, we give it to them, and therefore they do have all this power. Ignorance is bliss till you get caught in the whole trap that's going on here in the judiciary. But we have to fix this problem. It's up to the people. I do think that Trump and the administration understand some of this, but remember, they rely on lawyers, and they're going to take their advice over our advice until we can break that connection. To make them to understand that those people are doing what they're doing is all unlawful, that they are the minions of the New World Order. Whether they're doing good deeds or not, it doesn't matter. But do remember this one thing, though. You get, for instance, you take the president, and he gets advice from these lawyers, and they're going to focus in on, I think it's USC 3. Yeah, USC 3 is law for the president. It's about 1,000 pages. Okay, but it breaks down the powers and the authorities of the president. Okay, and you do need people, and these people are expert in this. Okay, and they are working in that, and all that is correct and right. Okay, there's a few things they should realize, like their own ability to nullify, but I do think they understand that, and I think they're not nullifying things just by telling the courts that are trying to interfere with what Trump is doing. Which is his power and authority, to tell him to go to Hades, you know? That's what Jefferson did. Jefferson ignored him. He nullified him, kept moving on. He'd done things, and he didn't allow them to interfere with his powers and his authority. And so I think Trump is letting it go through so the people see it, you know? Because some of these things could have been dealt with very quickly, but it seemed to take time before it got to the Supreme Court. I think he wanted the people to see it. I think he wanted to get it out there to ferment for a while. But maybe not. Maybe he is ignorant to this. Maybe the lawyers are ignorant to some degree of this. I don't know. But we have been communicating and educating. It's a one-way street. We've been doing presentments. We did a huge indictment on the federal judiciary as a whole already. We've copied all these people, particularly the president and the attorney general, and various other people. But we really have to communicate with all these people much stronger. We've communicated with a lot of these people 3 or 4 times, and a presentment is some of the key things. We even sent presentment to the United States Supreme Court. They didn't send it back, okay? You know, when I've done some things to the United States Supreme Court, and they sent it back. They didn't send this back. Why? Because it came as a presentment, and I think they're kind of leery about it. And it came as a presentment from who? The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And we laid out how we came to be. Okay? This isn't just a small group in the corner somewhere of New York. No, we're in every state of the Union. We've unified each state grand jury. So we have the Unified New York State Common Law Grand Jury. We have the Unified New Jersey State Common Law Grand Jury, and Texas, and Pennsylvania, and so on, Montana, and so on, all 50 states, including Alaska and including Hawaii. And so all those Unified Common Law Grand Juries came together, and we formed the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and had been given the authority to deal with these problems for enemies, domestic, within particularly the federal judiciary. Because our job really, or what we're really ultimately working on, is teaching people, of course, how to have government by consent and take control of government at every level, but also to get our courts of justice back. You can give us all the liberty you want. You can lay it out, all the freedoms we can have. But if you can't get into a court of justice to protect it, you have nothing. Absolutely nothing. And that's what we have. We have nothing. So, if you want something, let's get behind this case. Send us $5 or $20. We're not asking for $1 million. And people are, you know, people are given, some people are supporting NLA. They're given regularly every month, and we appreciate that. I wish everyone would do that. Maybe we'd have enough to go to professional, because we do have to go professional. The only way we're really going to get a lot of our accomplishments, bring a proper education back into the schools, which is another project that we'd love to work on. We have at least two authors at this point to work with us on this who I believe we'd say are experts in the field of education for the purpose of teaching our children who we are as a people, where we come from, how the law works, what is common law, teach them about the Constitution, which of course is the law, you know. There's a lot to be done. But, again, to get everybody to even just give $5 a month is like pulling teeth, it seems, sometimes, you know. We've got almost, how many members do we have? Let me take a look. I think it's 12,700, something like that. 11,000, I'm sorry, coming up on 12,000. We have 11,734 members at this point, right now, at this moment in time. Imagine if they all gave $5 a month each. We'd have so much money we wouldn't even know what to do with it. Well, we do know what to do with it. First of all, we'd go a professional. We'd start paying people to do the jobs that need to be done. Okay? And so that's what we would do with it. And if we were getting that kind of money, we wouldn't have to be asking people for additional money on top of that in order to do a project like how about taking our courts back? How about getting our courts of justice back? You know? If people are interested, if you, whoever is hearing my voice, whether it's here in this room tonight, or if it's on Rumble or YouTube, or even by other people sharing with other people, if you're hearing this message and you really want to take our courts back, send us $5 or $20. And if you got deep pockets, send us more. Look, I know it's hard to get things work out there, you know, as far as economically speaking. It's just difficult. Everything is so expensive. I mean, things have gone down in the past month or so, but nevertheless, it's tough out there. And I understand that. We're not asking for $1 million. We're not asking for people to give beyond their needs. We're just asking for a couple of bucks. And if you can make that $5 or whatever, and if you can make that on a monthly basis, it's even better. But if you do give a donation for that, filling out the donation area and filling out the information, we'll ask if you have a comment. And if you have a comment in that donation, write the words, however you want to write it. You know, this is for the U.S. Supreme Court case. So we can see what's going on. I mean, generally, I can see anyway. But we do need money to do this. And the sad truth is, if we don't get the money, the case is not going to happen. I'm going to do everything I can, even if I don't get the money, to try to squeeze dollars here or there to do it myself as best I can. But we got to get books out to these people. We got to educate these people. We got to communicate more with these people. And I'm talking about the people who are the good guys on our side, who's trying to make changes in this nation here, and to bring us back to where we were, going back into, you know, the beginning of this nation, 1789. I guess that's all I have to say about that. Hopefully people are going to do something, and we'll get this job done. Nobody else is working on this, by the way. Search the internet. Look everywhere you can. Nobody is working on this. And there is no direct work even from this administration. That doesn't mean it's not happening there, because it very well can be or could be. But I tell you again, it gets back to lawyers working this whole thing out, and you think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot and bring forth back the 13th Amendment, which takes away their citizenship for being an esquire. Of course, they didn't know that, but once they do know that, they have to leave the bar. All these judges have to leave the bar because it's destructive to who we are as a people. So we have to make these changes. It's up to us. Only the people can save America and save the Republic. And that's it. It's up to you. Okay, let's see if we have anybody in the queue here. Hopefully we do. Okay, we got one person. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone. And if you're on an Apple browser, there should be a button to get into the queue. Okay, we'll take our first person, and only person at the moment. Vern, tell us what state you're calling from.
Hi there. My name is Antonio, actually. I'm borrowing my friend's phone.
Hey, Antonio. What state are you in?
Good. New York, Long Island.
Okay. Got to get a committee of safety going on down there. Go ahead.
We've got tons of stuff going on here. I submitted today into the intake form, basically putting down what's going on with a friend of mine who has disabilities, and basically we went to the appellate court, as you were just speaking about, and basically they put a runaround around us into how we could submit the evidence with regards to asking for an injunction against the lower court. That was it, basically holding the sand, and still is holding the sand prisoner in the Riverhead facility, and basically not giving him his rights. They ever called in the grand jury to actually look at his evidence, look at the evidence in the case, so they could let him go after 6 days.
This is a criminal trial.
It's a criminal charge, but as we all know, it's civil.
If it's criminal charge.
Basically, violation of probation, which is actually not the truth, because we had already put in tacit agreements that they've never responded to any of the submissions we've created, like 20 submissions, and the court has responded to none of them. So basically, by tacit agreement, this case should have been over November of 2022, and they continue to ignore everything and basically continue on with harassing this person, and basically now have put him in jail. He's disabled. He was further permanently disabled. He was born with disabilities, but basically ended up with a further disability after his first unlawful incarceration for 2.5 weeks. And they basically, the corrections people told people in his case, oh, he likes little boys. It's not the truth. He was tricked.
Was he indicted?
I'm sorry?
Was he indicted?
He was not indicted by the grand jury. They indicted him by basically coercing him into signing away his right to a grand jury indictment, as well as for a trial by jury.
What court are you in? You're in the New York State? New York
Supreme
State?
Court in Riverhead.
Okay. Well, have you thought about going it up to the appeal and bring up the fact that there's been no due process? Because without an indictment, that's the beginning.
We brought it up to the appellate court. They were first very happy to help us, and then suddenly they made the stipulations all the way we were giving, sending them the PDF documents. And because it was an emergency injunction we were asking for because of his due process not being served. I mean, he was picked up March 18th, basically by the sheriff's deputies, who arrested him with not the proper warrant, no affidavit of claim, and they didn't even read him his Miranda rights. So they then put him in a cell.
What does the lawyer say about all this? What does he have? He must have a lawyer. They probably provided one, I guess, right?
I'm sorry, say it again?
They provide a lawyer to this guy?
They did, and then we told him he wanted to be improper persona or per se, and basically they ignored that, and because of his disabilities, and the judge knew that I'm his ADA advocate as well as his durable power of attorney, and that I speak with him and help him make his decisions. She ignored that during his arraignment, didn't have me present. Clearly, they gave me the runaround. They sent me to centralized slip when I needed to be in Riverhead.
Who writes the papers and makes the arguments?
I'm sorry. Say it one more time, sir.
In the court, who writes the papers and makes the argument on his behalf, you or him?
No. Basically, we have an outside coach that's been helping us.
Okay, and does that person understand how due process works, the court system, both federal
yes.
and state?
Yes.
And so they've been writing papers for you?
Uh-huh. Okay. Straight along.
All right. Well, I don't know what knowledge they have. I mean, look, at we all have a certain amount of knowledge.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And I'm not versed in writing too many of these documents. I've done my best here and there where I can. But really, I'm not versed in writing all these documents, and I know my limitations, so we reach out to this person. He's been helping us.
Okay.
And, you know, some things charge, some things not. You know, there's back.
Well, say if they require a physical hearing, is he going to show up to make that physical argument?
I would be there. And right now there's a hearing set for this coming Wednesday to go over his violation of probation, and meanwhile, it really doesn't exist because of the fact that they put together a a summons for him to come in because they said he was violating his probation, which was not true. We actually had already stipulated with them that he had an appearance fee for showing up because of the fact that they were not honoring his ADA requirements and needs to have me be present in his probation meetings. And basically that was because she would set different standards as probation officer, who we come to find out has no oath of office. And I have the proof of all that.
Here's what I suggest. Before I make a suggestion, I want to let everybody know there's still nobody else in the queue other than Burns. Anybody has a question or a comment or something they'd like to share or a correction or alter about this, get into the queue, and if you're on an Apple browser, there should be a button. But here's what I suggest, Burns. I suggest looking into moving it to federal court for cause. And if you don't understand, hopefully the person understands that the federal court can only hear the constitutional issues. Now, even though Cohen and his judge, administrative law judge, they can change. And that's
a good
job. As a matter of fact, it should be changing the Constitution. So if there was no indictment, okay? Number one, and they make a big thing about the Miranda rights, and I appreciate that, so there was no reading of that. Okay, number two, he was convicted. Did he have a jury trial?
No, there's no trial at all. He hasn't even had his
So these were all done by summary judgments.
Yep, and literally what has occurred is they've kept him in jail now a month against his rights, with just that he has a hearing on the 16th. We did a habeas corpus. They didn't allow us to put in the motion to show cause, which of course then negated the habeas corpus. And when we brought that to...
habeas corpus cannot be denied by law, but they do deny it because we've had plenty of them denied. And it's not that they even have the authority to deny it. But in any event, I pulled this to federal court for cause, and the argument that I would make is that, first of all, there's no due process. There was no indictment. It was a summary judgment, which by an administrative law judge, so it wasn't even done by a court of record. There's been no jury trial, and one of these things is breaks the law. And what you want, the wherefore clause, you want to be very careful in the wherefore clause, you want to, that court to cease and desist and release them. That's what you're going in to ask the federal court to do. It's a very simple thing in the sense that it's a one-paper deal. You shouldn't even have to go in to make the argument. Maybe they'll want you to come in and make the argument, but you'll go in, you're looking for them to take the Constitution to make sure that this person's vulnerable rights are being addressed and that he is getting the attention through his rights. And, and those are the issues I'd bring up and make very clear. You can't get into the case, what it's about. Again, I don't know what knowledge this person has. But if you break one issue in it that's not the constitutional issue, they're not going to hear the case. They're just going to throw it out and dismiss it. They're not going to hear it. Okay, it's got to be very focused.
Yeah. Well, I did send in
you can ask that person if they have questions to come to a Monday night meeting and ask certain questions, and we'll do the best we can to answer his questions or her questions.
Well, I sent in to you, I guess to you, the intake form, and I gave you all the details of what have happened in the last month with him. So I already did that. So that's already to send in to you today, and it was emailed in.
Right, but all that does is get attached to what we're doing, and we don't try to case it. We keep bringing it up as evidence, and at some point, all of these cases be heard. They have to get their due process, and so we're looking forward to the time when we can get courts of law back, because right now there are no courts of law opened anyways. And
not even the one in Ohio. I know that there was a judge who left the bench and gave back her bar card. It's got her name, I think. Catherine something, I forgot her name.
Mm-hmm.
But she's saying that she opened up a common law court in Ohio.
As a judge?
Huh?
As a judge?
I believe as a person. She gave back her bar card.
Every case that I've ever opened up, going back to when I learned and understood this thing, was thinking is maybe around 2012 or so that I really came to realize a certain part of, you know, this common law court, which is called the court of record. Every case I've opened up since then has been a court of record, but they've never acknowledged that it is a court of record.
Going
back into the administrative process, they'll use keywords that you've got to get into, and for instance, they'll call it a complaint. They'll try to push it through an Article 78, maybe. They play this game all the time. If you don't understand the game that they're playing, then those words pass by you, and the judge has a place to hang his hat, and he feels comfortable to go against you. You got to do everything you can in that case to make that judge uncomfortable, to let him know you're breaking the law. You're hijacking me into jurisdictions unknown, bringing me under civil law, and I've made it very clear that this is a court of record, which is a jury trial to begin with. And the beginning of that case really is to move to have the summary. The only time you really want to use a summary judgment and it's permitted is to protect the common law. So ultimately you want the judge to make a decision on the fact that this whole thing is unlawful, there's no due process, this case must be dismissed. So you want to very carefully write that paper. You know, I wrote a book called Memorandums Common Law. Now, I got a lot of memorandums in my book. I got memorandums in other places, different books that I have, but I really put together and updated all of my memorandums, but I put together, I think, 40 of them all together, very powerful memorandums in a book called Memorandums of Common Law. Let me see. Right under the book, books by John Durrell, actually click on that. It's not opening here. Okay, Memorandums of Common Law. This is a good book. It gives you a lot of information to write the court case. And I got another court book also that's helpful. That's being in live. But this is helping really write some really great papers. Okay. It's a large book. It's a hardcover. Now, let me see. The purpose of this book is to provide more in support of the common law to people with true heritage and to alterations in the republic. You got a lot of noise coming through. Maybe leave the mic while we're talking.
Oh, hang on, I'm losing it.
I'll mute the mic. I'm going to mute your mic, and I'll unmute you when I'm finished. You disappeared, though. Well, if you get back in, I'll pick you back up again. Anyway, let me just read this. The purpose of this book is to provide memorandums of law in support of the common law, to educate the people of our true heritage, and to reveal the destructive alterations of a republic by enemies domestic. Our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. If we, the people, do not restore our republic, acknowledge God, and pass it down to our posterity, we will fail to continue as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Declaration of Independence is the foundation of American law, upon which the Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights rests. The Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God, desiring to live under His law and thereby receive the blessings of His liberty. Anyone who endeavors to interpose will in time be met by His wrath. Okay, I don't know that I'm going to read much more, but people can go up here and read this, the introduction to this book, Memorandums of Common Law. So that's a book I strongly suggest that you might want to get and give to the person who's writing these papers, and they're going to get a lot of good stuff in here. Let me just really go quickly to give you, read a sample, give you the information that some stuff in this book, okay? So we have abrogation of the law of the land. Remember, these are all memorandums. Abrogation of the United States of America, 3/4 of a penny worth. Amendment 2, Amendment 10, Amendment 13, Amendment 16, Amendment 17. America was founded upon Christianity, fashioned after Israel and not Rome. Article 3, courts, the balance of power, and they destroyed the balance of power. The Rules Enabling Act totally destroyed our Constitution. It abrogated so much inside of it. Seventh Amendment it abrogated. The preamble it abrogated. The power and the authority of the courts it abrogated. It got rid of common law, courts of record. All gone. We don't have it no more. And if people are happy living under that, then don't support us. Okay. But if you're not happy, again, I get back to asking for money. I hate to ask for money. You know, we did a lot of we give a lot of stuff for free, by the way. And a lot of all these handbooks are free also, PDF downloads. Okay, we make a buck or two off of them, and that goes into the, you know, supporting us. So. But anyway, if you want to get back into the queue, I'll pick you back up again. I don't know what happened to you. You kind of fell away. But until then, we'll take our next call. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We only have one other person left in the queue. Another person came in. *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. should be a button there to push if you're on an app or browser. Okay. Frosini from New York, you got the mic. Let me hit the button here next. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello. Yes, regarding that book that you were just talking about with all the memorandums, I really couldn't tell, but do you have it available as a PDF at all, or a Kindle that can be copied as a PDF? Because, you know, it sounds like it's a very powerful resource, and it would be a lot easier if it's like a click link thing.
Yeah, no, it is powerful, of course. Let me go back to the first page on books by John Duresh. These books here, Government by Consent, Court Access in the Common Law, Memorandums of Common Law, Understanding the Federal Courts, also the Study of Parables and the Book of Revelation, and What Must I Do to Be Saved? Now, all those books are regular books that are being sold, and you know, I don't have them particularly up on the website, but I will tell you one thing. Everything in my books is up on the website. You just have to search them out. But these books, all the handbooks, okay, let's see, the County Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook, the Committee of Safety Common Law Handbook, Founding Documents of the United States, County Sheriff Common Law Handbook, Common Law Petit Jury Handbook, Common Law Handbook for Grand Jury, Common Law Court Handbook. By the way, that's a pretty good book, this Common Law Handbook, Court Handbook, because you can get information off the fly when you're in the court. Common Law, and then a Common Law Handbook, which is I wrote the book that was stolen from me that someone had gotten up, put up on the internet, and that had, I think, about 40 pages or 50 pages on it, and it was the Common Law Handbook. Now, I did this handbook, and this is goodness, this is a big handbook. It's a handbook, but it's 227 pages, okay? Now, this is the only handbook I don't have up on site. I'll try to get it up there in PDF. But all the handbooks are free in PDF. But the regular books, no, they're not available. But all the work is available on our site. You just have to search it out.
So the memorandum one is or is not? Oh, you said the handbooks are available as PDFs, but the memorandum one and the other books are not.
Right. The large books, which are major books, you know, this is maxed out to size, 550 pages, I think it is. Court Access, the same thing, 550 pages. Memorandum of the Law, 300 and some odd pages, but it's an 8.5. I think we did that as a 12 font. Okay, all these books are large books. You know, they're 8.5 by 11 hardcovers. They're all hardcovers too. I didn't do paperbacks because, you know, these are books you're going to want to do reference all the time, and paperbacks will start to fall apart if you're going to use it as a reference book. So I did it in hardcover, but I also found out, which I may try to do this, I may provide these in paperback. But I'd have to do it 8.5 by 11, otherwise it'll be 1,000 pages. But in any event, I may be doing it also in paperback, only because I just found out that when you publish a book up on Amazon, that if it's a paperback, that they will try to get this into stores, you know, bookstores, and possibly even into libraries. I don't know why they won't do that for hardcovers. So I'm going to experiment with that maybe and just do Government by Consent and do it on a paperback and see once whether I can get it into stores.
What about Kindle? Because if
Kindle, you mean reading?
Well, yes, because I'm thinking if you still sell the book.
Yeah, all these books are done on Kindle also. Not the handbooks, but these major books are.
The books are? Okay, well, because then that would be digital, and I think that would be easier to copy and paste for someone who is using.
I don't think you can cut and paste off of Kindle.
Really?
I'll tell you what, though. You know, if you got the book and you wanted to copy and paste the things, you can put it on a copy machine, turn it into a PDF into your own computer, and then the PDF can be turned into a Word. And So that's one way to do it, because it is a lot easier. It won't pick up the footnotes. I mean, it will pick up the footnotes, but there'll be no connection. Okay. Number 1, 2, 3. So you have to make the connections once you put it into your into a PDF and then cut and paste it and use it. But I understand what you're saying or talking about, because I mean, all my court cases, or no, I wouldn't say all my court cases, but most of the work in my court cases, I'm able to do most of my work by cut and paste, maybe 80-90% of it, and then I got to sew it together, making it work for that case. You know, that may.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of that person that was just speaking, who's trying to help that person in jail, and you know, one of your suggestions was to write the paper with memorandums, and I just thought that would make it
all right. Well, not so much as writing a paper with memorandums. You could take the memorandums and write a paper using the memorandums right in your main paper, which is what I'm going to be doing a lot of that, because I'm probably going to pull a lot of resource out of that particular book going up into the Supreme Court with the case concerning the Rules Enabling Act. And you can take the because there's so much stuff in there. I mean, it doesn't have to be a memorandum that you're using it for. It could be just taking it out to build your case inside. I use memorandums to expand on a point or a position, so it doesn't put too much information in the main action.
Okay. Yeah. I understand.
But you got to, you know, going back to just as I use the word action, you got to be careful, because they'll refer to it as a complaint. And whether it is the other side referring it to as a complaint or the judge making a statement referring, you got to correct that immediately. It has to object to that and have the record correct. This is not a complaint, because that just changed jurisdiction once you allow that to go by.
So if you're correcting them from using it or referring to it as a complaint, what is the preferred term?
Action at law.
Action at law, okay. Action at law, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Or just the word action, but I would use the whole term action at law. And by the way, let me just make this another call out for people who want to get into the queue. You know, we still have over a half hour. We have nobody else in the queue, so *6 and 1 if you want to get into the queue, if you're on a phone. App or browser, click the button. Should be a button there somewhere. Meanwhile, we'll stick with you until someone else gets in. What else you got?
I think that it would be helpful for, you know, like I'm, you know, I hope that fellow is listening, that he's trying to help that person. And I also think that it's important to start out, well, if there's any recategorization when you first start something, for instance, I mean, and you can chime in on this, but I was told that when you go into court, first of all, there's something about not passing the bar, like refusing to pass the bar.
That's insane. No.
Okay.
I understand that. I understand the reason behind that, because I saw the one-sided point to begin with. And when I went into federal court to make my argument against the IRS, I talked from my seat. I didn't go past the bar because I was under that influence too. And but remember this, the bar, B-A-R, which identifies really with the bar that separates the people who are viewing listening in on the case and observing, the observers. And on the other side of the bar is all the players. You know, you have the jury there, you have the, if there's a judge or a magistrate, you know, sort of a traffic cop, and you got the two sides making their argument. Okay, that's on the other side of the bar, okay? Now, the BAR, capital BAR, which is the British Accredited Registry, that's a game they're playing in order to change everything to that point, leaving it as the bar on the one hand, but really focusing in on the registry. And for instance, I heard a lot of people make cases against Lincoln, say, oh, he's no good, he was a bar attorney, he would bar this and that. And he had, well, no, that's not true. He was not a bar attorney. He passed the bar, which meant he went to his peers who were in law, studying law, whether they be judges or other lawyers, and he would go past the bar to be quizzed by his peers in order to agree that he has a right to practice law and that he would be certified as an individual who understands the law. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't walk in and present your case and represent other people, but people need to know if you pass the bar or not and from that perspective. Now, passing the bar is today, since the American Bar Association has been established particularly, by passing the bar is really passing the necessary teachings of the British accredited registry. So, and Thomas Jefferson passed the bar in order to get accepted as a lawyer. So all these people did. All these people that were lawyers, our founding fathers, quite a few of them were lawyers, but they were not bar attorneys as we understand as esquires. They were not that.
In fact, right.
That didn't exist yet at that point.
Right. Well, it kind of sounds to me like a PhD, like a PhD goes and presents themselves and answers questions to show themselves.
Yeah, and what happens is you get on the list. Right, then you get onto the list of potential lawyers that they have passed the bar, the test of their peers. Okay, so if you want to go to court, you may go look at the list to see what lawyers have passed the bar, and you say, okay, this guy or that guy or whatever the case may be, But again, that's been abused, and everybody is bar approved, meaning the British Accredited Registry. And when you go into their courts, they are requiring you to have their license, okay, which they call a license. We know it's not a license. And you can defeat that with, there's a federal code that talks about what's called the next friend. So you can beat that out with that. But the thing is you're going into the administrative courts, which has been bastardized. They've called it civil law. They put law and equity together, call it civil law, and they apply all these statutes and things against you. Okay. Well, to go into that particular case, to some degree they may have a point, but nevertheless, they've lost their citizenship according to the 13th Amendment if they've become a bar attorney. And they are not.
In addition to, and I thought the bar was something about maritime law. That there was like the bar of the sea or the ship or something.
I've heard people bring that up too, yeah. That I think is made up. Maybe there's some validity to it. I have heard of it, but I'm not interested in digging so deep into that. And I have more things to study and look into than that. I've come to my state of mind thinking it's ridiculous, but people don't understand that. And people who are teaching that have not done enough research to really understand both sides of the story here and what's really going on and what it really means. But that thing with the ship, I've heard that before, but I've never seen it.
Well, the whole maritime versus whatever, land law or something.
Yeah, the docking in, the registry, your birth certificate, your berthing,
right.
And the dock and all that stuff. I understand. That's a big game that they put together. And it's a play on words to begin with. But some of these words were created for the purpose to connect more play in words.
Right. And then there was also something about, like, I don't remember the wording, that when you go in to try to get yourself out of their jurisdiction, there's a certain thing that you should say, like representing yourself or I'm here on my own, not reconnaissance necessarily, but there was something like that. Does that ring a bell?
Well,
like something to establish yourself not under their authority right from the beginning.
Yeah, you're coming in on your own person. That's what you want to do. But look, you do want to play back the game of words because they say certain words, you need to correct those words. And
right.
And really, it's not going to save you right now in the court. It could make if the judge has a little bit of smarts, especially the federal judges, but if they get a little bit of smarts, they may start to get a little nervous because they're seeing that you understand what's going on, if they understand what's going on. I don't know that they understand. On a federal level, generally speaking, they probably do most of the cases, but nevertheless, I don't know how much of them really understand. But nevertheless, when you make those corrections, it ruffles their feathers on the one hand, and if they're understanding what you're doing, I think it might make them feel a little nervous. But you got to, and I do it for future because I'm looking at resurrect all my cases in the future. I know I'm not going to win on this side, but maybe I will. I just won a case in traffic court. I think I'm going to win a case against the comptroller here in New York State. They've done everything they could to push me into a different direction, and I think I'm going to win that case. But win or lose, I'll share the case because I think it's pretty powerful. It dealt with all of the crazy, stupid stuff that they play, their word games, and we keep correcting us, trying to push us into an Article 78, trying to make us have a complaint. You know, literally when we filed the papers, okay, some lawyer came out because the clerk had some concern about our paperwork. He came in, and I literally wrote right on it, complaint, where we had action at law. And we made the argument, no, this is not a complaint. He understood what he was doing. He understood we understood what he was doing. And we told him that, well, someone's going to be liable for this because now you're altering papers. Well, he came out with whiteout and took it off.
Okay, and instead of complaint, what was it again that used to say, something at law?
It said action at law.
Action, okay. I got to write that down, yeah. Okay. All right. I think that if you start out, quote unquote, correctly, whatever that exactly means, it could set it well or doom you going forward. And
the whole thing is a fraud to begin with. And look, the only way we're going to get justice is by reopening courts of justice. The courts of justice has been closed in the United States of America. You can't get them. They don't exist. I don't know if there's any court that'll give you justice anymore. But in any event, I tried to make the case clear, so it's going to be, you know, at a later point in time, when we get courts of justice back, it resurrects in a way that's already set the stage to correct everything. But even though it's not corrected, you know, the whole thing is a fraud. They purposely kept us ignorant. You know, you got to keep the slaves ignorant. You can't allow the slaves to know how the court system works, you know, because that's a problem if they understand what we're doing, you know. So I'm talking from their perspective, of course.
So, I understand, yeah.
So, all of this is a fraud. There's not one person, in my opinion, that's in jail that's there lawfully. I may be wrong in that. Some of the older cases, even though after 1938, maybe even into the 60s, even the 70s, maybe even the 80s, there may have been some courts of justice that was appropriate and people did get justice. But generally speaking, once they taint the jury by writing a handbook for the juries controlling them, and if you read that, you can see it's a controlling handbook. Once the judge steps up and says, hey, you get to decide the facts, but I'm going to tell you what the law is, and if you broke the law, you got to find them guilty. Well, that lacks due process. Statutes lack due process. That's why statutes
are
used, you know. And all that is just polluting the whole court system. And the way things are operating today, there is no court of law open anywhere. Justice is nowhere to be found.
And what is the term again? Like, I think it's nullify the jury
nullification, the power
jury nullification, right.
But that's only necessary in a case where someone in a criminal case is brought up into a court of law. You know, they have to go to it when they're under statutes because maybe they're working commercial activities or maybe they're working in a government agency. And they're sort of a government agent or they're operating in commercial activities. So in those cases, they're under regulations, they're under statutes. We gave them the authority under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. We gave them the authority to write 18 powers. The 18th power is the right to, the ability to write law on the other 17. Okay, and that's legislative law. It still must conform to common law. Still must be under the rules of common law. But of course, they've taken that away. They abrogated that by Rule 2. In any event, all of that is the proper process that they have to that they should be going through. I just lost my train of thought. In any event,
another question. Give me a second. is there anything under your education department of your website that kind of has a little mini teaching on how to do the footnotes with memorandums?
Well, everything I do has footnotes, and the memorandums has their footnotes. The actual action paper, the action at law paper, that has footnotes. I use footnotes on everything, you know, to make every point, every phrase, every lawful phrase, legal phrase, or word.
Do you have like a how-to, or should we look on YouTube to learn how to do that?
How to attach a footnote?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's pretty simple to attach a footnote. But we do have, I know in our course we do have a listing. Let me get to it.
I'll
tell you how to get it without it anyway, but let me just show you in the course here. If you go to the course, Court Access in the Common Law, and we go to, that's the recording. This is the table of contents. Okay. Dude, it's pretty slow tonight over here. There it is. Okay. Now, towards the bottom, we give information on YouTubes that will teach you the beginner's course. Okay?
Oh, okay.
So if you go to YouTube, everything I learned on, well, some of it I learned on using words just by hit and miss, and I figured things out. Putting footnotes, for instance, I went onto YouTube, how do you put a footnote in Microsoft Word? And people got all kinds of, videos out there. You get a lot of different things.
Okay, you actually have a list of the YouTube links that have been helpful to you.
Let me shut that down there. This here will go you as an intro to this particular, Microsoft Word for Beginners. It's a four-hour training course in Word 21 and all the way to 365. They pretty much all work the same. So this one here, a four-hour course, is pretty good. I mean, this is 4 hours long. It'll get you through all the basics.
Uh-huh.
Now, you can get very specific, though, okay? You go out to YouTube, and I'll go out to YouTube, and I'll put in, let me do that. Go to YouTube, and then I'll put in MS Word, so I'm going to search MS Word, okay? And then put footnotes. Let's try that. MS Word, footnotes. Okay, and how to insert footnotes and endnotes. Right there. This is a good one right here. Okay, but you can look at a few of them. You know, sometimes people, you can't understand what they're saying. They're foreigners, and it's hard to understand. But you'll find people that, that you can't understand. But there's quite a few here. You only need one of them to learn. So,
all right, and that's what you would do for a memorandum. You would just list, you would make note of the memorandum in the body of your document, and then put a footnote to it.
Once you click on footnotes, let me see if I open this up. Okay, let's take a document and let's go. There's like just anything there. Now I want to put a footnote. This is how simple it is. Go out to references, insert footnote. Okay, write what I want to write. And I'm done, and there's the footnote number one, and there it is down here. I use Georgia at 10, okay, 10 font. Up here, I use Georgia 12 font, okay. I also, for court papers, I use 1.5 space, okay. And then, look, a lot of people write and they don't realize that they should square off the edges. You know, I click on this here, which is to justify. It's not a left, it's not center, it's not right, but justify. And justify, keep it square all the way down the line, and you square here, and the paperwork looks pretty. You know, a lot of these little things, you really should learn if you're going to write court papers or write a book or anything, because it's very easy to find anything you want on the Internet.
Okay. All right.
I see Ross is here. Let me open up Ross, and I'll leave your mic open if you want to pipe in with us on this. But Ross, let me open up your mic. Go right ahead, Ross. You got the mic. Ross, you got just muted. I am muted, yeah, but you're still muted on your end, Ross. All right, well, we'll continue. If Ross comes back, he'll unmute himself. Hopefully he'll know he's unmuted and he can talk. You got anything else? Because we have nobody else in the queue.
I did have something. Give me a second. I was waiting on Ross there. Give me a second. Okay. I know how to indent, but it only indents, it doesn't square off the indent. Is there anything special about how to do that?
I shouldn't have shut that. What do you mean by indent? Let me see if I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I can hear you. Hang on one second, Ross. Let's do this. If you're talking about indenting by tabbing, like that?
Yeah, but then, like, let's say I have a paragraph and I want to, like say, do a quota passage, and I want it to be square, but, like, indented on the right and the left and be a self-sustaining.
You click on increase dent. So everything that you run on this line that runs is going to be indented from the stuff from above it. Okay?
From both sides, from the right and the left, though? Like, in other words, I want to indent.
Only on the front. In order to do the back side,
yeah,
over an inch here, so I would move this, just come up here and pull this over an inch.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right, cool.
And as long as you have it on justify, it'll be nice and square, and it'll be different. And when I do that, if I'm going to do a quote and I want it to be out there in front, you know, I would do the indenting like you said. Maybe it'll be three or four lines, maybe a particular quote, founding father quote or something like that. But then I would also reduce the spacing to 1.15, so it's a little stands out. I also would italicize it, and so that really stands out nice. You know, if you look into a lot of my books, I do that a lot.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Ross now. If you want to stay in there, in case Ross doesn't have much.
Comes
up. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
How did you I want to support the case you can take to the Supreme Court.
All right, something about supporting the case that was sent into the Supreme Court. What do you want to say or know about that?
How you send money to that?
I only pay
$5 a month anyways, but...
Yeah, if you want to donate $5 or more to that, you just click on a donation tab, click on Donate Now, and you go here and you can donate give a one-time donation. You click on that and then just put your information in, and you get at the end you get to put a comment before you push send, okay? And you should put, if you're going to send $5 or $10 or whatever you want, you push the... you go to the comment and just make a note what it's for the Supreme Court case, just so I know and kind of can separate it to some degree. Anything left over will go back into NLA to support us, what we're doing.
Okay.
Anything else, Ross?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, appreciate that. Back to you, Francini.
Yeah, okay. Again, I'd like to get it straight in my mind that if we're ever in a situation where we have to go to court, is there any kind of summary of, like, these are a good way to just establish yourself well? Like, I have heard people say where if they've gone in and they said, I'm here, how did you put it?
Special appearance?
Right, special appearance, representing myself or as a living
in persona, in my own person, in persona.
In my own person, right?
You're not representing yourself. You are yourself, and you don't want
right.
to get into representing.
Correct. I'm just writing this stuff. Special appearance in my own person as a living human being under God.
You have to put all that stuff up. That's really, they think you're nuts when you do that, because I don't think, that, especially in the state court, I don't think they really understand what's really going on here. So I wouldn't do that. I just use the proper legal language that's necessary to do it. I'll see if I can give you an example here. Let's see, we'll go into education starts here. Let's go to law. Here it goes. By the way, here's some memorandums of law if you want right here. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Not all of them, but that book.
And that was under topical? Okay, under topical.
Well, the education starts here, come down to law, then over to the right, and you can click on the memorandums if you want. But we're going to go to forms and process. And, for instance, let's go down to instruction forms for court for traffic court. You click on the appearance ticket. I write an appearance ticket, okay? The lawyers do that, so I'm going to do the same thing, okay? And basically, please take notice that, put your name here, hereby appears in the above entitled commercial code violation. In this case, it's a commercial code violation. It has nothing to do with me, but I'm making the point. This is for traffic court. By the undersigned who is appearing on his own behalf in this commercial traffic court complaint. Okay, again, by special appearance. What does that mean? In the footnote, I got a footnote number 2. A special appearance is for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of service or the jurisdiction of the court. Okay, so we're making this general appearance, and we're testing it. We're not agreeing. We're not submitting. We're not coming and saying, "Well, you got jurisdiction over me." No. What is the jurisdiction? So it starts off with a notice of appearance. That's what I do anyway. And then it goes on, testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the court. All papers in this action is to address to the address below, blah, 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 and you put that info. But that's one of the papers I use. The other thing is you come in with a notice of motion, and you're going to challenge that notice of motion. You're going to use that, which is a cover sheet. And once you make a notice of motion, in the traffic courts, they don't ask for money. At least I've never been asked for money. If you're in a state court, I know here in New York it's $40 or $45, I think. But you're not going to need that. You need a notice of motion, okay, in the traffic court. Then you come in and you do your verified jurisdictional challenge. You know, and here's opening a court of record. It's a verified jurisdictional challenge, okay, and this, the jurisdiction is a court of record under the rules of common law. I, your name, one of the people of your state. So I, my name, one of the people of New York State, herein after petitioner by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of this Nisiprius town, village court, whatever it is, traffic court, petitioning via the verified action hereby opens a court of record. You say, now that your court of record has been opened, to move this court for dismissal for lack of personam jurisdiction. Then I lay out how it is that they don't have jurisdiction over me. Okay? And so, use the language. You've got to be very careful, but I don't use the language of the man on the land stuff, under God. You know, I don't use any of that. I have standing. I'm one of the people. I've already established that right here. My name, one of the people of New York State. I just established everything they need to know about me. I've just established my standing. Okay? Now, there is a little more information I'm learning that you have to put in on standing. I have never been thrown out for not having standing, but it's something that they could potentially throw me out on.
They are doing that now, yes.
Yeah, and so I'm working on that right now. I know Bob Schultz, you know, mm-hmm. with people, he's been out of thrown out of the court so many times for lack of standing. He gets all the way up there, and then they throw him out for lack of standing. And he's been refused by the Supreme Court, where they say he doesn't have standing. And all standing is really making the point, and I'm working on a paper that I'll file eventually up online that people can get an idea of this. It's basically making the point that you are going to be, that you are disenfranchised or injured if this doesn't get corrected.
So okay? Is this something, right, is that modification or augmentation of your, you know, like the elaboration on how you do have standing? Are you going to be able to incorporate that early on in this part so that to avoid them getting to roll in?
I've already laid out the fact that I have standing, saying one of the persons. But if you don't make your point clear, look, you can come in with the best case in the world and get all the way up to the Supreme Court or just even through the district courts, okay? You can get in and then they throw you out for not having standing because you didn't establish how it is that you would be injured. It's that simple, you know. Look, if it's a denial of due process, which is protected by the Fifth Amendment and also the Fourth and even the Seventh, so you make your point And that's your damage, a denial of due process. Therefore, I've been injured. So you don't have to turn, because people think, well, you don't have standing because you're not a multitude of people. Well, what, and if that was the case, what does a multitude mean? Is it 5 people, 1,000 people, 100,000 people? How many people have to be injured in order to have that standing? That's not what they're saying. But they don't explain what it is, you see. Now, if you go into a federal court, and you can write the best paper in the world, a slam dunk that they have no choice but to rule for you, but you add anything concerning that case that you moved up to the federal court for cause, okay, the cause is due process, that's the only argument you can make. If you bring any issues up concerning the case, they're going to throw it right out of court. And they're probably not even going to tell you, well, they're not going to tell you why. Okay, they're just going to throw it out. We're not going to hear this case.
So wait a minute. The most basic and legitimate reason that a case should be ruled in your favor or dismissed against you is because almost by default you're not getting due process because of the administrative court. You're saying that they're going to throw it out?
If you bring in any issues concerning the case itself, because the federal court can't hear the case issues. They're not going to tell you why they threw it out. They're just going to throw it out.
Isn't that kind of a catch-22?
Well, look, at first of all, they're not there to teach you, okay? Although, because we are the people and we're not lawyers, they should give us a little bit of a heads up. Hey, look, we're throwing this out because of this. Go fix it. They're not going to do that. They prefer not hearing cases. Any way they can get out of not hearing a case, they'll do it.
Correct. So then would it be better just to not get into the specifics of the case, but then
You don't get into any specifics of the case. You're in there for due process. That's your only argument. You don't care about the specifics of the case. If you're challenging the due process in the court itself, where the assault upon you arises, okay, some cop gave you a ticket and now you're stuck in the traffic court or code violation of some other type, whatever the case may be. So you're there, and now the special appearance says, I'm not here. My appearance here, does that mean that I've given you jurisdiction over me because I'm challenging the jurisdiction? Then you do the jurisdictional challenge. And you only talk about the jurisdictional challenge. You talk about the fact that this is for commercial activities. I wasn't involved with commercial activities, blah, blah, blah. All that, okay. If you read this paper, you'll see all of that in here. And you can work this with any kind of a code violation. Just address it properly. The whole thing is due process. This is not due process.
Okay, so again, to avoid
the previous court, which is an administrative court that has nothing to do with me.
Exactly. So in order to establish right from the beginning, because the alternative is to follow their flow, oh, what's your name, and then boom, you've now put yourself under their jurisdiction.
Right, there's nothing here to discuss other than jurisdiction. This court case cannot move on unless you first establish jurisdiction. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard. Okay, the judge will then turn to you. Well, I looked at your paperwork, I heard it, and I decided I have jurisdiction. No, you're prejudiced. You believe you have jurisdiction, but you haven't looked at the argument. As a matter of fact, I put in an affidavit challenging this whole thing, laid out my case, and it has not been rebutted, and you only have the choice to look at the paperwork before you and not take any information outside of that and look at the case and have to rule on what's before you. I win because I have an affidavit, and they didn't challenge anything in that affidavit. Therefore, they acquiesced.
Okay, so if you go...
I'm going to let you go after. This guy came out after me tooth and nail. I mean, he wanted to put me in jail. I mean, it just went through the whole things. I moved it into federal court, into state court, because I figured, let me move it to state court first, challenge the jurisdiction there. I still have an appellate process, and I also have a federal process I can move through. So you get a lot of shots, you know, a lot of bites at the apple, so to speak. So I did it that way, but I went right into state court, made the challenge, and they defaulted. They literally defaulted.
Okay, so would you say, I'm trying to simplify things just for my limited understanding. The goal, the overarching goal, is to not acquiesce or agree to them having jurisdiction over you right from the beginning.
That was your jurisdiction. You need to prove you got jurisdiction over me. I'm showing you don't have jurisdiction. This is administrative. This is commercial. Shows you commercial code, traffic violation. That's
right.
Commercial. It has nothing to do with me, so you don't have jurisdiction on me. You
right.
may have subject matter jurisdiction over this matter, but you certainly do not have persona jurisdiction over my person.
So in order to not get tricked, basically, that's how I understand it, get tricked to acquiescing jurisdiction, you don't just go in there and follow their procedure, which is what is your name, you know.
You're a special appearance. You bring it right to
that's
that. There's nothing to discuss
right.
here, Your Honor, because I challenge jurisdiction. Let's go forward with the jurisdictional challenge. That's
okay.
where we go to. Now, look, the other thing is this, and look, just like everyone else, I learned with the School of Hard Knocks. And we used to go into the courts, and then they'd have you come back the next month. And again, there was one case I was working with a guy. We were working together on this. Must have went in there 8 times, almost a year in the courts going back and forth. Then eventually I woke up and realized, wait a second, this is a one-time thing. This is it. And I let it be known that if you're not going to give a proper hearing, because this case, first of all, this court is incapable of giving me due process because it's a nisi prius court. That's number one. It's administrative. So therefore, you can't give me due process. And since you can't give me due process, you can't come at me with anything. So I only go in once. I don't go in twice. I only go in
right.
one. Once. Once they violate and don't acknowledge the law and respond properly, they're going to get a paper from me moving them into state court for cause, violating my right of due process.
And that's called nisum what?
Nisi prius court. The word nisi means unless and prius before. And so unless before. A nisi prius court, and ultimately what that actually means, is that unless before you agreed to it. When I started, if I was driving a cab, for instance, or driving some kind of a commercial vehicle, okay, well, I agree to the codes, the regulations, and whatever is involved in, that I have to obey, that was written up in statutes in order to operate under that commercial activity. And if it's in traffic, that you're driving a vehicle, well, then you're under that authority, and they can give you a ticket for speeding
right.
or whatever, and you can't escape that because you agree.
Yeah, if you agree,
that's what it is. Unless first is what it means. Nisi prius
right.
first.
So you want to start challenging, so you're not agreeing, basically.
Right. There's nothing to discuss in the court because they don't have personam jurisdiction. A court cannot go forward without subject matter jurisdiction and personam jurisdiction.
Right. I want to get used to that process, and I guess following that series that you outlined in under education with the different notices, the notice of appearance and then notice of motion.
Right. Yeah, that's laid out on the forms, and of course we cover that in our course.
Right.
Are you taking the course?
I started to, and I keep forgetting to get back into it. I apologize. I get
well,
distracted.
Apologize to yourself. You're not injuring me. You're injuring yourself.
I know. But these are the kinds of conversations that remind me to get back on it.
Yeah, you have to develop. If you're going to be good in court, you have to develop self-discipline. Okay. And you got to be self-motivated. Those are the two prime things to be successful in anything, okay? And much, much more in a court. If you're going to be good at this and want to be able to articulate yourself well, be able to roll off your tongue, the things you have to roll off. And I wrote a handbook also to be helpful for this. So let me look at that. I'll show you real quick. Again, under Welcome Books by John Darash, I got some good, I did a lot of good write-ups on all my books, you know, so... let's see, where is this common law? Where is that book? Committee. Oh, yeah, Common Law Handbook. Okay, this book here. This is a really good, powerful book. It's 311 pages. Okay, it's in handbook form. Okay, and if we go through it a little quickly, okay, because we're coming to the end of the program. It gives you all the information. You can quickly get information on this inside this handbook, okay? And so this handbook will give you a lot of off-the-fly info, okay, a lot of stuff. But anyway, I think it's pretty powerful if you want to have a handbook in court. I originally wrote this, I do have this in PDF. I don't know whether I put it up in PDF, but I will put it up in PDF if I didn't. But I wrote this originally for myself, so when I go into court, I can flip through things quickly and be able to refer to different quotes I might want to bring up,
right,
or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But I do have a different strategy. My strategy is there's nothing to discuss here until you prove jurisdiction. And I'm not going to tolerate anything but the law. And if you're going to break the law, then I'm not coming back here no more. I'm going to the state court and then to the federal court if I have to go there.
Well, part of it for me is that it's so much information. And unless I can differentiate like an outline, like right now what I'm trying to focus on is, okay, when I go in, my first order of business is to challenge jurisdiction, and this is how you do it, as opposed to like a million other things that are legitimate but not needful right now. Like to me, I have to sequence it. I have to say my first order of business is establish or challenge, really, challenge jurisdiction, and then to do that, this is what you want to do. So this is what, you know, how to go about it.
Otherwise,
there's a lot of info to decipher, and it becomes overwhelming.
Look, if you're only concerned with dealing with traffic court and code violation courts, which, by the way, we're going to have to close down in a minute or two, but if you're only concerned with being able to deal with that, then what on that, excuse me, on that page that I gave you where all that information is,
mm-hmm,
you can just follow that process and pursue it. I don't know how far I take it. Let me see. I don't remember.
I would think it would work for almost anything because, yeah, as you know, I'm involved in the divorce.
It does. But once you get into more complex cases other than basic commercial cases, and again, you can keep cutting them off at that point and just stick on the challenge of jurisdiction, moving on up. But if you really want to be good in court and be able to really defend yourself and articulate whatever the case may be, the main thing in a court case is really the facts. That's what you want to become, you know, very specific about and have all the details you have to prove. Because what was Lincoln said, you know, all I need is the facts and I'll win any case. I just need the facts. Okay? And that's true because we don't need law. There is no law but the common law, which is common sense. That's all common law is common sense. And it's a construction of maxims, things that cannot be denied. Okay? But if you want to be, you know, get involved with other things and maybe a criminal situation if something comes up against you or other things like that, then you don't want to be really, you know, really do a lot of homework in this stuff. You know, there is also the practice of law, which are the statutes for the purpose of violations or code regulations and violations. You know, for instance, the federal court has 57 jurisdictions, and each one is for a different thing. And I'll just give you a quick example. For instance, U.S. Title II is for Congress. It lists out the powers and the authorities of Congress. U.S. Title III is for the president, okay? U.S. Title IV is for the flag, seal, and government and states, okay? So each one of these codes apply to a specific agency, let's say. And you know, you'd want to, if you wanted to practice law, and really get deep into that, and you'd specialize in certain cases. For instance, the people who represent the president, they specialize in USC Title III, okay, because they know all the powers and the authority of the president, and they give him advice. And so Trump has a lot of good lawyers around him for that purpose. The good news is that he's got lawyers around him that understand that. The bad news is he's got a lot of lawyers around him that understand that, because they don't understand the common law, and they need to understand the common law and the rules of common law, which is common sense. Again, the power of nullification comes from common law. It doesn't come from statute. So they lack that side of it.
Well, I know we have to go, but I just wonder if I would have had better chances if I had gone into my divorce thing and answered the summons with something from the beginning, because I think the error, I didn't go in with, in special appearance.
Well, you could have moved it right away into a trial by jury And that would be difficult to do because they will fight you to a tooth and nail. But if you were able to do that, then you have to then go through a whole trial case and prove that you'd probably lose a lot of that also, because remember, I've gone through the divorce process information and what they do and their logic and their deductions and how they figure things out. You can't argue with that layout. Okay, you really can't. You can debate certain things, okay, that may not be right, and that you can pull in to the court system. The problem is they'll only give you a judge to make the decision on that when you're going to want a jury to make the decision on that. So you have a jury on that.
Okay, so that would be the push, though. That would be part of my effort, first of all. And second of all, I challenged the jurisdiction multiple times, and I think because I didn't start out right, I was wasting my time.
Well, you see, again, you, when you go through a divorce, if you were to go to a trial by jury and discard everything they have, well, then they're going to fight for the record keeping or the procedures that they have. They're going to try to fight that in the jury trial. And if you go look at that stuff, you're going to find you're not going to be able to win against most of it. Now, issues will come up. And the issues may have to be decided by, of course, that would be decided by the jury. That would give you a better benefit if really they're pushing things too far, or whatever the case may be. You know, so issues. And when it comes to the children, that's a major problem, because now you have a whole bunch of lawyers. I mean, they can't agree on anything. It's all about money, fighting, and everybody gets destroyed during the process. Well, these people are trying to make every dollar they can, because that's all it's about. And like I said before, we need to change this whole system with family court. It needs to be clinicians being involved with this. It's all about trying to patch up and repair whatever they can patch up and repair, and then go through things in a much more humane way, not orders and decisions and commands and applying statutes and all that craziness. No, the whole system needs to be revamped. You know, they call they don't even know what a court of record is, because it's an impossibility the way they run things for that to be a court of record.
But would I have had a better chance had I started the procedure, established myself as, you know, coming in on special appearance, blah, 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 and introducing from the beginning, I'm not going to play by your rules. And
they will take those if you were able to pursue a jury trial on that. Okay, they're going to take all their information and bring it in. They're going to take all the procedures, the mathematical equations that they use in order to decide, what's fair with this, that, or the other thing, and they're going to win in the argument of logic. They're going to win. Okay, there'll be some issues you might be able to beat out on. And issues will come up when you'll be able to defeat especially like with the children. Okay, a lot of those issues could be argued, and you potentially can win the argument before a jury.
Let me ask you this.
Down in the division of the property and all that stuff is pretty logical. You know,
if I were able to challenge jurisdiction, then I wouldn't be under their laws and their formulas and all that, right?
Well, you'd have to move into a court with a jury, and so they would make the decision finally. Look, I try to tell people who are going through the divorce, first of all, you're throwing all your money away. You're trying to save every dollar here or every dollar there. Meanwhile, you're going to lose all those dollars that you think you're saving, and so much more to all these lawyers, because they love to spend time with these things. And every time they go to court, they're going to charge you a fistful of money. And it's just crazy. So why don't you all sit down, lay out what one wants and that you think is yours and the other one think is theirs, negotiate back and forth, give a little, take a little, work it out, then move to the next step, how you're going to have money, so on and so forth. Matter of fact, even if you pulled their, they've got a handbook that they give you. That's how I learned it. They got a handbook on how this whole process works. And
I asked them about that, at least because you're in Dutchess, I'm in Orange. They denied having any knowledge of that.
Knowledge of what?
A handbook on how to go through the court.
Well, you go to the court system itself, they'll give you the handbook on the process and procedures, but then they'll give you all of the mathematical equations, which is all the paperwork that you can receive. It's a whole wad of paper. In other words, when I did a divorce for my niece, okay, I got the whole thing. We sat down and we did all the paperwork in one sitting, got it all together, got the affidavit, pulled it together, and just started to hand it into the court as we moved along.
All right.
So
all right, I don't want to,
that, that is mostly in that. The court, the handbook, every court has a handbook on how things work. And they also have their rules, which is, I throw them into the garbage can because I only accept any rules that is not repugnant to the common law. So a lot of their rules are not repugnant, okay? So you can go along with a lot of them and then you object to others. It's repugnant.
Yeah, it's all repugnant.
Yeah, well, they're repugnant is the problem. You know. So anyway, okay, we got to go. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we're done for the evening. Good night, everybody. And again, hopefully, people will help out to get this court case in before the United States Supreme Court. And let's try to win our courts of justice back. We have to fight for it. So. Okay. Good night.
Good night.